behaving. It keeps moving around. I'm not going to touch it. Anyway, hopefully, stay. Welcome to Kim Ash's Offshore Banter, episode 6. We're doing well. Hopefully, you've been enjoying the previous episodes. Well, you're here now. I've got you. Lock the doors. So anyway, instead of one big story today, I'm going to tell you a few different smaller stories of the times I've had to NRB people. If you don't know what NRB is, it's an offshore term. It stands for not required back. So it's those times that we've got somebody that can't or won't do their job. Now, I've always said this, can't do and won't do. Can't do, sometimes you can show them how to do it, and then they've got a great attitude and they become a great member of the team. Won't do is a different story. Won't do is just somebody who's belligerent, lazy, doesn't want to be involved, and bye-bye, there's no helping most of the won't do's on a project. And I like to minimize the number of times I've had to NRB anyone. So anyway, right. The first person I'm going to talk about, because I am quite proud of the fact I've really not NRB'd many people. So when I do, I like to think it's for a really good reason. But the first one I'm going to talk about, or did I talk about Yuri? Have I told you about Yuri yet? I think I told you about Yuri on a previous episode, who got NRB'd. And of course, Barry. So you've had a couple of NRB stories from me already, I think. But I'm skipping past those, right? Both of those were part of the Ramsgate thing. We're now skipping forwards a few years. And which vessel was it? Oh, yes, that's right. Oh, there's lots of drama on that vessel too. Some vessels just seem to be cursed. Anyway, it was towards the end of the summer season. So we're talking about maybe September. There's maybe a month or two of good working time left offshore in the season. And we had a freelancer join my team. Again, allegedly, he was an offline surveyor. And he was one of these guys, and look, I'm not being judgmental about personal characteristics, because sailors are weird, the best of them, but it stuck out to me that he did this, and it didn't reflect on his work quality. That stood apart by itself, don't worry. But he was one of those guys, on a ship, you get 4 meals a day, right, prepared by the galley. You go to the mess and you can have your 4 meals. Of course, no one has 4 meals. Very, very few people. You have 3 meals. And the meal times are like, you know, 6 a.m., 12, 6 p.m., midnight, right? Plus or minus half an hour. That's pretty standard across the industry. Some ships are a bit different. Some French ships have really weird meal times. And a few Italian ships have some odd meal times, I've noticed. I think it's a continental thing, but it kind of throws off your whole day routine. But anyway, I'm digressing. But this guy was one of those that would get up in the middle of the time when he should be sleeping and resting. He would set his alarm and get up specifically just to go to the mess for that fourth meal in the middle of the time when he should be resting. So every single day he was exhausted. This just reminds me of another character I had to NRB. Anyway, I think I'll include that one as well. But I might get in hot water for it. But I'll try and be very diplomatic. Anyway, so back to this guy. He knew nothing about his job. I think he had some basic skills in AutoCAD, something like that. But they had recruited him as an offline processor. So he was processing very technical data streams that would create charts of the seabed, bathymetric data, all that kind of stuff, which is a very specific way of processing data using very specific software that he knew nothing about. And depending on, when you've got your bathymetric data, you've got your seabed terrain, You might have to correct it up or down in accordance to a tidal adjustment, depending on whether you want LAT, lowest astronomical tide, or mean sea level, stuff like that. NOAA, the Americans, oh, they're terrible. I think they do MSL, mean sea level, for a chart, which is a really poor indication, so far as I'm concerned, of how to get a ship safely through shallow water. Because if you go off a NOAA chart, you don't have a guarantee that you can get through if the tide's low, and you don't factor that in, and you don't know what the tides are. Whereas good old Admiralty charts, my personal preference, LAT. So that means that regardless of what the water depth is, unless there's some weird negative storm surge happening and the water's been sucked away, you can almost always guarantee that you're going to get through even the shallowest, shoalest water safely. So anyway, you correct the data up and down. Again, little technical digression. Forgive me, one of those days. And it's a really simple thing. You just go into the parameters of the entire chart and say, you know, plus 1 meter, minus 1 meter, lift the whole thing up and down, whatever the adjustment is to take it from what the data should be to where it needs to go. It literally takes 5 seconds. And I'm not an offline processor, but it's one of those things that I could do. Pretty much anybody who's a surveyor, online, offline, party chief, reports coordinator, anyone could do it. This guy, I asked him to do it, and it took 3 hours. I was busy with other stuff. The client was waiting for the delivery of this corrected chart, and after 3 hours, he had done it wrong. Not only had he done it wrong, he hadn't just moved the seabed in like the wrong direction or something. He had actually gone through the whole chart and tried to painstakingly piece together a seabed that reflected a change bit by bit all across, so the whole thing was just fell apart. It was terrible to see it. I showed him what to do. Eventually, I did it for him. Outputted it, took it to the client. Client was happy. And then I went back. I said, okay, this is something we need to work on. After an endless amount of time, this man could not get even the most basic concepts through his head. It was embarrassing. I felt so bad for him that something that's really simple, like literally on the side of the screen, there's a little box. I can't remember what it says. It's like, I don't know, seabed adjustment. There's a number, you can put in a number like plus one, minus one, something like that, right? Just showing him that. I could not understand it. I tried to explain what it was doing and why we had to do it. Couldn't understand it. The next day, the client wanted another output of bathymetry. Same problem. I had to sit there with him and do it for him. Day after day, there were basic errors like this all the time. And I was losing my patience a bit, because he was letting everyone down, and it just basically meant that everyone else was having to do his job for him. And I gave one simple example, but it was like that with everything. And then he would just rush off as soon as he could to go for his meal and stay there as long as possible and eat as much as possible and then come back. And I was grateful when he went for his food, because it meant there was less chance of a liability. I remember that. But then, you know, he came up to me towards the end of his rotation, and he knew that he wasn't coming back. I'd said to him, look, this is not a job that you're really cut out for at the moment. You need to train more, learn some more basic things, and, you know, maybe try again sometime. But I can't have you back on this project, I'm afraid. But he came up to me and he said, Kim, I've been freelancing all season. And I said, okay, very good. Where else have you worked? And he told me. I said, how many other trips have you done? And he said he'd done about 4 months of work over the previous 6-7 months, right? So he'd been working quite a lot. But every time, he was never asked back. It was always a different project. He would just get off one boat and jump straight onto the next one with anybody that would need him. And at the time, there was a shortage in the industry of surveyors. Quite often happens. So he would had no difficulty getting onto another job. And he said to me, "Kim, in the last 7 months, I haven't been paid." I said, "What do you mean you haven't been paid?" I said, "Are you a freelancer or are you staff? Are you on somebody's salary or are you a freelancer?" He goes, "Well, I'm a freelancer. I started freelancing this season." I said, "Okay, and you haven't been paid, what, for this trip?" And he goes, "No, I haven't been paid anything for the whole season, anywhere." I said, "That's a big problem. Why is that? why have you not been paid? Who's your agent?" And it was a big agency. Not going to name names. Near the start of the alphabet. Anyway, not unusual, believe me. So, I said to him, "Well, what do you do to get paid? When did you submit your first invoice? How long has it been?" And he said, "What do you mean, submit my invoice?" I said, "Well, you need to submit an invoice to get paid." And he goes, "Well, how do I do that?" Well, I said, "Look, after you've signed off your timesheet, you send it in with your invoice, and then the agency pays you. Simple as that." And I know that this agency, even though they can have some quite flaky people, and they do play some games that are not so healthy historically, they do pay people. They're not one of the really bad ones that shuts its door every 6 months and changes name and starts up again. They do pay people. I said, "Well, how many timesheets have you submitted?" And he said, I don't know what a timesheet is. I haven't done that." I said, "You are kidding." "No, I'm not kidding." And I was actually, at the time, working through the same agency because I didn't know any better. I'd only been freelancing for a short time and they'd been paying me all right. I had problems with them a year later. Don't worry about that. Anyway, so I got out my computer, personal computer, and pulled up the paperwork that you standard kit. You know, here's a blank invoice. Here's a blank timesheet. I said, "Have you seen anything like this?" He said, "No, I don't know what these things are." So I said, "Okay." I printed out some timesheets and I filled his timesheet in for the time that he had been on my vessel as part of my team. And I signed it off for him. I said, "Right, that's your timesheet for the last month that you've been on my ship. It's signed. You just now need to submit an invoice with it alongside your timesheet. Send it to your agent and you will get paid in about 4 or 5 weeks, because I think that's how long they normally take to pay. And you've got 2 days to send it to them because it's coming up to the end of the month and we submit on the last day of the month." I said, "Do you remember which other ships you've been on and which other projects and who else you had as your, effectively, your line manager or project manager, offshore manager, anything like that?" He said, "Well, I could ask the agent." He really had no idea. And he had not signed off a single timesheet or submitted an invoice in over half a year. And he'd been going from ship to ship, eating as much food as he could, because when he wasn't on a ship, he had no money to eat properly. And he was staying in friends' places and all that kind of stuff. It's like he was in a desperate situation. And I don't understand why the agent hadn't told him anything. I find that inexcusable when you've got a new freelancer who has done 4 or 5 months of work for you. And how is that agent invoicing for that person if the timesheets weren't there and the invoices weren't submitted? So it was really frustrating that you had this guy that really was a waste of space anyway, being frank. Not a bad guy, but just not not somebody you want on your team, wasn't getting paid. And I felt bad for him. I still had to NRB him, of course. So the next season, the same guy ended up on my ship on two occasions on different projects. So it was three times in 2 years. And every single time it was the same story. He at least had started to get the invoicing and the timesheets right. So at least he was getting food. He was still getting up in the middle of the night to get his fourth meal. Poor guy. I feel sorry for him. But his work had not improved at all. Like, he literally had not gained a single bit of experience or skill that had any value to the projects. So that was one guy I had to NRB. Now, okay, on to the next one. I feel bad about this. But, I mean, this is not... This is about a guy who was a Muslim. Okay, so I don't mind what people believe and what they think. Let everybody live their own lives. Everyone has their own beliefs, their own ethical code, and their own way of living. And as long as everyone lets everyone live and supports each other, I'm great with that. There's no problem at all. And I expect people to be like that for me, and I treat everyone else like that. But sometimes there's a real conflict between... Well, in this instance, between this person's interpretation of how they practice their belief and their professional situation in a way that is actually incredibly hilarious, but it felt uncomfortable to be put in this position. I'm going to tell the story. Be brave, Kim, be brave. So with all due respect to anybody of any faith, especially in this instance to Muslim brothers and sisters out there, and non-binary Muslims, if there are any, of course there will be, I just want to tell you a little bit about one character. And I was party chief on a ship, and we were operating way in the northern end of Norway in the middle of the summer, and it was Ramadan. But it affected his health, and it was his health that made me think, okay, I need to NRB this guy. My understanding, and I might get this wrong, but this is what he told me, and this is what happened, was that during Ramadan, fasting is a very serious thing, and you cannot eat or drink water during the hours when the sun is above the horizon. And we were in northern Norway, and this guy was a surveyor. And for those that don't know, one of the many things that surveyors need to know is a lot of stuff about longitude and latitude, about the geography of the planet, about things like axis of rotation, and, you know, all of the stuff that's needed for positioning. And as part of my training as a surveyor, we even had to do astronomical positioning and sunshots and stuff like that. So using celestial mechanics as a way of determining where we were on the face of the planet. So surveyors should really have a really good understanding of basic things like time zones and stuff and hours of daylight and things like that. But this guy had come to northern Norway in the height of the summer during Ramadan, and the sun didn't go below the horizon. And I said to him, well, look, can't you just like use the hours of daylight at Mecca? And I also thought that there was a provision that if you were a practicing Muslim but you were traveling and away from home, you could defer Ramadan defer the fasting until you went back home, or something like that. I said, look, I'm not somebody that knows anything about it, but I have heard a few things like that. And he was steadfast about saying, no, I cannot eat or drink when the sun is above the horizon, where I am right now. And we had this discussion on day one, late in the evening, and I said to him, well, look, we're in northern Norway. The sun doesn't go below the horizon. What are you going to do? Because now we've left port, and it's 2 weeks until we get back to land. So you're on here for at least 2 weeks. What are you going to do? So what he decided in the end was at about 5 to 12, 5, you know, 11:55 in the evening, 23:55, until about 00:10, the sun touched the horizon. And he said, well, I will use that 15-minute window to eat and drink. And I thought, okay, let's see if this can work. It feels pretty desperate to me. And I said, look, I'm going to be honest, my friend. I'm worried about your health, because if you do that for a month that you're meant to be on here, that's a really desperate situation. How long until Ramadan is finished? Until Eid arrives? I think that's the point, isn't it? Eid is the end of Ramadan, the celebration. Am I right? Put it in the comments if I'm wrong. You know, let me know. I'm always happy to learn and be educated. So anyway, he did this absolute gorging on food for 10 to 15 minutes every single night. And his shift started at midnight. I said to him, look, you can have whatever shift you want, because I want you to be comfortable. I want you to have every chance of pulling this off. He said, well, I want to start the midnight shift. Midnight until midday, and then I get a good sleep, and then I'm ready to eat when I get up in the early evening, waiting for midnight. I said, okay. So of course, this meant that he was always 15 minutes late for his shift. So I asked the other guy, do you mind if we just defer the start and the end of shifts by 15 minutes to give this guy a chance to eat and drink everything he needs for the next day? But of course, he was gorging on food, made himself sick, you know, so quite often he would have a bucket by the side of his the online desk. When he started his shift, he'd eaten so much and drunk so much liquid, and his, you know, belly was distended, he couldn't cope with it, and he would spew a bunch of stuff into this bucket he had next to the online desk. Of course, everyone else is in the room with him. The ROV pilots, the shift supervisor. Quite often I'm there, survey tech, other people. And we're all just watching this guy try to hold it together. And after about 5, 6, 7 days, I'm looking at him and I said, this is not working for you at all. You look pale. You really lost colour. You're losing weight. You look really unhealthy. And I'm genuinely concerned about your health. And so, yeah, when we went back to port, he got through to the 2 week mark, but he was really looking anemic. He was looking under the weather. I said, you have to go home. I think he was Egyptian. I think he flew back to Egypt, where, you know, he could enjoy, what, 8, 9, 10 hours a day, where he was able to eat and drink without too much stress. It was a difficult time for him. Poor guy. Alright, so another one. I wish him well. He was actually a really good surveyor, and I liked him a lot. But I just thought, you go to northern Norway in the summer as a surveyor, you should know you've got no time to eat or drink. So anyway, there was another one. This guy, absolute, can I say a-hole? I'll say a-hole. You know what I mean, a-hole, right? I don't want to needlessly use profane language, even though I'm a salty old sea dog. Catch me in real life, or I use some stronger words. We had this guy who was a real a-hole. I was a client on this vessel, and we were doing ploughing of cables. So for those that don't know, the cable is laid on the seabed and it has to be buried down to depth. So we had this plough that was sitting astride the cable and drag it behind the vessel, and the plow would dig a trench in the seabed and push the cable down into it, or let the cable rest down into it gently without damaging the cable. Well, this guy was from Lowestoft, East England. Oh, turned out his CV was a complete hogwash, lie after lie after lie. In reality, he was an ex-fisherman, trawlerman. I've got nothing wrong with fishermen at all. I grew up in a fishing village, nothing at all. What I don't like is when people say that they've got the experience they don't have and they take a position of authority without the knowledge to do it. Donald Trump. Anyway, did I say that? I didn't say that. Did I say that? I'm non-partisan. Anyway, this guy was absolutely a liability and belligerent, ignorant. He kept pulling the plow, not just a little bit offline, but way offline. He was the shift supervisor, instructing the vessel which way to go to stay on course to get the cable into the right place, bury it in the right position. He was dragging the cable across the seabed, dragging the plow out of position. Every time I went up to go on the bridge and have a look at progress, I saw the historical track of the navigation of the vessel, and I thought, what on earth are these guys doing? I expressed this concern to the offshore manager, and of course was sending regular reports back to my people on the beach, on land. And everyone said, give him a chance, you know, this is difficult ground. And it was quite hard terrain. The southern basin of the Baltic, which is quite shallow and quite rocky. So it was definitely hard going with the plowing. I understand that. But all the more reason that, you know, you need good people and keep everything under control and don't just keep gunning the engines, the thrusters, and hoping for the best. This guy had no idea. So it got to a stage where he realized that he was not doing well. So he started creating chaos on the vessel to throw everyone, to misdirect people towards the fact that he wasn't the problem. But it was so transparent what he was doing. So, for example, we had a marine warranty surveyor who also happened to be a Pakistani Muslim guy, who was a lovely guy. I think he was quite old. He was like 65 or something. Very experienced. Really nice guy. Absolutely, completely orthodox Muslim. And this shift supervisor accused him of having smuggled bottles of vodka into his cabin and was a drunken and alcoholic and was hiding it. And I said to him, are you serious that you're accusing an Orthodox Muslim who's a very senior member of this team of being an alcoholic? Is that where you want to go? You really want to do this? Because if you do, put it in writing, make an official complaint, and it will be thoroughly investigated, and we will all live with the consequences. So make sure that's the road you want to go down. Do you want to go down that road? Have a think about it. Let me know in a few minutes. Of course, I went and told my colleague, who's the marine warranty surveyor. I said, look, this guy has made this allegation about you. I said, I think you're going to find it really offensive, and I'm really sorry to bring it to your attention, but I'd rather you knew that this was happening. And I said, I'm pretty sure I can handle it without it going anywhere. And my intention is, quite honestly, with the way this guy is a liability to the cable, to the vessel, and to his crewmates, I have every intention of getting this man removed from the vessel as soon as possible. So if it escalates or goes anywhere, I will let you know. And the marine warranty surveyor said, don't worry, not a problem. You can handle it. I know you can. I said, thank you for trusting me. I'll get back to you with an update. When that didn't work, he then got into a physical fight with a deck foreman and said that the deck foreman started it. And then when that didn't work, he got into a fight with the chief officer on the bridge And then he started screaming and swearing at the captain as well. And it was that point that the OM and the captain said, yeah, okay, we agree with you, Kim. We want to get rid of this guy. I said, well, look, you've got a really basic decision to make here. I have already arranged for a crew transfer vessel to come out to the field and come up to this vessel. And either he is going back to land on that vessel or I am. And if I am, you won't have a client on board and this entire operation shut down because I do not feel safe with this man on this boat. I have made it really clear for the last couple of days. This is the way it's going to go and you've all ignored me. So make your decision. He's on the boat or I am. Anyway, we got rid of him in the end. He went, and you know what? The cheeky little upstart. See, I controlled myself. I don't always have to swear. When the crew transfer vessel hit the field and was cruising towards us and was about to take him off the boat, he went round, everyone on the bridge, trying to shake their hands. It was a real pleasure working with you. Thank you. I really enjoyed being on here. It was a really good project. Hope to see you again soon. All this stuff. I'm like, is this guy for real? Does he not know that he's just basically been, like, really heavily badly NRB'd? And I certainly would never want to be on a vessel with him again. Except that I was. Funnily enough, about 3 years later. And this time, I don't know how it happened. He was the client. I do know how it happened. Bad agencies and big companies not doing their due diligence. Anyway, he was the client. And the weirdest thing was, he didn't recognize me at all. Even though I'd NRB'd him a couple of years before, he had no recollection of me whatsoever, and I kept it that way. But I was working under this Dutch guy who was the superintendent, the offshore manager of the vessel, and then the guy I'd NRB'd was the client. So I took the Dutch guy to one side, who I'd worked with down in Nigeria before. No, sorry, Congo before. And I said, this guy's a liability. I'm glad he's the client because that means he can't touch anything. But I just want to warn you, this is the story. This is what happened. Keep your eyes peeled and watch your back because he'll stab you in the back as soon as he gets a chance. He's like, thanks for the warning. So anyway, there's a few NRBs that I've got. There's in 3,000 days of ships and thousands of people I've worked with, mostly in a senior role, it's probably 20 to 30 people. Oh, I've got time for one more. I'm going to give you one more. So 20 to 30 people that I've had at NRB, most of them are not bad guys. They're just doing the wrong thing at the wrong time in their lives. So, the last one. This is the last guy I had to NRB. It happened last year. In Taiwan, where I live, working on a project. He was such a nice guy. And we were based on land, right? So we were working in the yard. Where the ships would come in and we'd load them out with all of the equipment and all the assets they needed to go and do the offshore construction. I'm not naming names, I promise. He was a lovely guy. And he'd be, you know, the first one, all right, Kim, how you doing? Can I help with anything? You have a really good attitude in the workplace. But he just liked to party. He has an alcohol problem, basically, I think. You know, you could put it down to that. A lot of offshore guys drink a bit too much when they get a chance. There is something about being on a ship for a long time or working those sorts of hours that when you've got downtime, you want to cut loose a bit. And I understand that. But this guy, next level. Absolute next level. So I think the first time, he disappeared for a couple of days. It turned out he'd been in a brothel and he woke up with a raging hangover, no money left whatsoever, standing on a street somewhere in the port that we were working in. He had no idea where he was, couldn't speak a word of Mandarin, had lost, as I say, his money, lost his wallet, lost his hotel key, couldn't remember anything. And it took him hours and hours to find his way back to the hotel, blundering around in the tropical heat, dehydrated, with a headache, arrived back at the hotel looking like he'd just crawled across the Sahara without any water for a month. Absolutely sunburnt, decimated, looked... he looked terrible. I said, do you want me to call an ambulance? What happened to you? And he told me. He was very honest about it. You idiot. There'd been a time when we had a couple of days off and I didn't expect to see him at the port. But when he crawled into the hotel, I just saw him arrive and what on earth have you done to yourself, my friend? And I said to him, look, I know you need to cut loose. I know we've been working hard. I know this is your first chance to catch up with yourself. But I'm afraid this has to be your first warning. I can't have you putting yourself at risk like this, when effectively I have a duty of care to you. So this is your first warning. I said, you're going to get a second warning, and if it happens a third time, you have to go home. He said, all right, Kim, no, I understand, no problem. I said, go to bed, get some rest, have a shower, get some food, look after yourself. A couple of weeks later, something similar happened, and it was just when he was about to go home at the end of his trip. I said to him, okay, I almost said his name then. I said, okay, that's your second warning. Now you're going home. Have a break. In 6 weeks, you're coming back here again. So when you come back, best behavior, okay? Because you're a good guy, you work really hard, you're a great member of the team. Love having you around. You're a real character. Fun guy to have on the project. Happy working with you. I don't want to have to send you home. I know, Kim, I know. I've let myself down. I've let my wife down. I've let myself down. I've let you down. I've let the project. I've let everyone down. I stop moping around. Pull yourself together. Sort it out. When you're home, look after yourself. Have a chat with your wife about it. So anyway, he flies off. He comes back 6 weeks later. Everything's off to a good start. All right, Kim. I'm doing well. I'm looking after myself. I haven't had a drop from, like, all the time I was home. Didn't touch a drop of alcohol. 2 weeks in quarantine, didn't touch the alcohol. I'm absolutely here, focused to be part of this project. I'm so happy you've had me back. Thank you. Honestly, none of this will happen again. Well, it happened again. And of course, couple of weeks into his 6 week rotation, I've got a ship coming into port that next morning. Everybody knows, the whole team knows. 6 o'clock in the morning, 0600, we have a vessel arriving at the quayside. We all need to be on top form. Like, the vessels only came in every couple of days, right? So there was always a bit of recovery time, but when a vessel came in, everything had to stop. All the team had to be on top performance. Down there, focused on turning around really quickly. Everything done safely. Everything done really highly professionally. No exceptions, right? Never had a problem with anyone on the team about that. All of the guys were really good. Hi, guys. You know who you are. You know which projects I'm talking about. If any of you watch this, thank you for being awesome for 2 years. You were awesome. And, well, you know the stories. So anyway, right, I get up early, do my makeup, get myself all kitted out, ready to go down to the port. Standing outside, 5 o'clock in the morning, waiting for the lads to turn up. And they all turn up, except for one. And our minibus arrives. Our driver's there, and he's standing having a cigarette next to the minibus. I'm like, morning, ni hao, ni ma, all that stuff. Hello, how are you? Have you eaten Jepawe? And we're just waiting for this one last guy. This guy. And I said, has anyone seen him? Has anyone seen him up? Have you tried calling him? Because somebody tried calling him. The vessel's going to be here in 45 minutes and we need to be there ready. Can you call him? Somebody get in touch with him. We have to leave and I can give him 10, 15 minutes and then we are out of here. And everyone's like, yeah, Kim, we get it. Okay. Everyone's sort of scattered, going up to his room, knocking on his door, phoning him, walking around the hotel, looking to see if he was, you know, coming back from somewhere or doing something. Eventually, after about 10 minutes, everyone's back at the minibus except for this one guy. I was standing there and I said, like, we gotta go. And just as I said that, without a word of a lie, at that exact moment, just down the street, we see the silhouette of this offshore grunt staggering, lurching, dragging his carcass back down the road towards the hotel in the early morning light. And it's him. I said, right, you lot, get in the minibus, let me handle it. I went up. I said to him, you've been out all night drinking, haven't you? Yeah, Kim. You know what this means, don't you? I have to send you home. I have to. We've got a ship coming in now. All the team, everyone's seen it. Everyone knows. I feel terrible having to do it. But you've got a problem and I can't help you with it. You need to go home and sort yourself out. And this is not where you do it. Alright, Kim. I can come to work now. I'm good to work. I said, No, you're not. You're not fit to go on a work site. You'd be absolutely a liability to all of us. Just go to bed. Get some sleep. We will speak after I finish with this vessel today. And of course, I came, did the work down at the port. Everything was fine. All the lads were like, Kim, what are you going to do? I said, he has to go back, doesn't he? Not only that, when we get to the port, because we now have a major safety violation and we have a team member that's AWOL because he's drunk, all of us, I'm going to ask all of us, if you don't mind, I want all of us to be breathalyzed. Right, so we can all demonstrate we are all zero blood alcohol. Has anyone got a problem with that on the rest of the team here this morning? Everyone's like, no, Kim, we're absolutely focused on today's work. So I got everybody else breathalyzed just to establish that it was just this one guy. We all hadn't been out drinking. Everyone's focused on the job. Protect them, protect me, protect the project. Went back. Told the office, told his agency, got him on a plane and sent him home, and I felt terrible doing it because he was a lovely guy, but can't have that around on a ship, can you? Or in a port, wherever in this industry. So anyway, there's a few NRBs. I think this was quite a long episode. I'm sorry if it's too long. Oh, we can cut it down or something. Anyway, this is me, Kim Asher. I hope you enjoyed episode 6 of Offshore Banter.